It feels like AI is just about everywhere. And we've been told it can be a game changer. And sure, I've used AI myself for brainstorming and tweaking my own website copy. While I've found AI useful in some areas, I wasn't convinced that it had much value for lawyers beyond marketing until I met today's guest. Join me for an insightful conversation about what lawyers need to know around how to utilize AI, what to do, and what not to do. Hey there, I'm Heather Mulder, a former big law partner who, after 18 years of private practice and a breast cancer battle, traded in my multi-million dollar practice to help lawyers like you build your ideal legal practice around the whole life you want to live. Because you shouldn't have to choose between professional success and personal happiness. And the good news is you don't have to. Join me each week for actionable strategies, real-world insight, and proven tools for developing the mindset, leadership, and business skills you need to succeed in both law and life. This is the Life in Law Podcast. Welcome, everyone, to the Life in Law Podcast. This is your host, Heather Mulder. And today we have a guest. We have Marriott Clardy Davis, who is a lawyer, mental health advocate, advisor, and thought leader for in-house counsel, navigating emerging technology. As assistant vice president and assistant general counsel at Primerica, she provides strategic legal guidance across the firm's RIA and broker-dealer business lines, leading key regulatory initiatives, SEC filings, and risk management efforts. Believing that AI confidence is now part of legal competence, Marriott launched Unboxing Generative AI for In-House Lawyers, a hands-on workshop series designed to help lawyers move from AI confusion to practical application. And I happen to know that she's working on stuff to help you private practice lawyers too, and that we will be getting into stuff that can help both in-house and private practice lawyers. So I don't want to lose those of you because I get a lot of questions around, oh my gosh, what can I even do with this? Can I use it? How can I use it? How can I be safe? And we're going to get into that today. I am super excited to have you with us here today, Marriott. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Oh, yay. So for everybody out there, we had planned to do this last fall. And then did you have to cancel the first time? We have like rescheduled this three times. One of us got sick and then something else came up and then I got sick and it's been crazy. So I'm super excited because I very much wanted to get this episode into the season and now we're doing it. So again, welcome. Super excited that you're here.
Yay. Let's dive in.
So, okay. I've had a number of my clients and prospects say, when I ask them, so what's something you would like covered on the podcast? And AI actually comes up quite a lot. And it surprised me at first. I don't think it should have when I really think about it, but it did surprise me. And so a lot of lawyers that I hear from say, especially the private practice lawyers, it seems like maybe I should know how to utilize this to my benefit. I hear that it has a lot of benefits, but I don't even know where to start, how to think of it, what to use it for. And of course, I'm totally scared to death of the potential risks. So it's so overwhelming. I don't even know how to start with it. So what would you say to those folks specifically?
So that is an excellent question. And I would start at the beginning. And for me, the beginning is always mindset. I think that mindset and how you approach change and anything new really sets the stage for being able to grow. So generative AI is change, but it's a tool. And like any new tool, your openness to be curious and to understand that there is no wrong answer, your ability to, I think, give yourself grace to explore and experiment will help with not just the fear and the overwhelm, but really give you the ability to learn a little bit at a time. I think us as lawyers are conditioned to be perfect, where we can't open our mouths or can't submit something unless it is perfect, unless you know everything. And when you're learning something new, you're just not going to do that. And so you have to give yourself that grace to be scared, be fearful, be overwhelmed, but do it anyway. So I would start there.
You know, something else I've learned just in using generative AI so I do utilize it now quite a bit for brainstorming, for ideas, like if I'm going to write a blog post and when I put posts together or I put a podcast together, I have a very clear understanding of what I want to cover. And so I put an outline together. But it's a great place to go and say, okay, here's what I'm planning to cover. What holes do you see? What else do you think I should be covering? And sometimes it's not that great, FYI. But what I've learned is you can train it over time. And you could train it to think more like you and give it more information and examples and other things. But it thinks more like you, speaks more like you, and then starts to give you better ideas. And then also, sometimes that idea generation, it might give you stuff that you don't think is good, but yet it spurs you to think more creatively. And then you figure other things out. But I wouldn't have had I not brainstormed with it. So I think that sometimes that perfectionism also is limiting in this area because we think, well, I want to be able to give it a set of instructions and then get back exactly what I want perfectly. And that's not exactly how it works.
100%. And I think that goes back to, for me, the basic premise is how good are you as a guide and a leader? Whether it's a human or a tool, your ability to lead and guide with the instructions that you provide, even if it's a human, bad instructions give you a bad outcome. With a human, a tool is no different. And the more that you learn how to be a better guide and be a better leader within the tool, the better your outputs will be. And that, I think, Heather, your example with knowing that it's not going to be perfect, but being able to work with it and collaborate, use it as a collaborator versus like the final boss. Like if it's either perfect or it's trash. And there's not an either or. There can be room for an and an evolution.
Okay. So what would attorneys even use AI for? Like give us some examples of how they could, somebody's saying, okay, I'd love to. I'm willing to put in the time. I'm willing to train it, but what do I even use it for?
So I would say this, start with non-legal tasks. So start small. And the smaller you start, the easier it is for you to learn and grow. So I always start with general tools. You don't have to have an enterprise tool and you don't have to have a legal tech tool. ChatGPT, Gemini, start with the free tools, but do something that is low risk and low lift. And what I would do is start by asking the tool, hey, I'm new to you. I'm trying to learn to use you better. And that may sound very elementary, but that is truly where you begin at the beginning. And just say, can you ask me some questions to help me figure out what I can use you for? And it will do that. It will ask you questions. And from there, it'll give you recommendations. Hey, you could think about using me to help plan your next trip, or you could help use me to brainstorm or ideate or organize. And so again, it's not a one size fits all, but you can collaborate with it to help you with the first steps. So that's really where I'd start if someone was completely clueless of where they wanted to begin.
I love that because what that opens you up to is you can utilize it to help you with personal tasks as well as professional tasks.
Yes.
So when you're talking about that, I'm thinking organizing a list for travel, thinking through the options. You're going somewhere new. What are the kind of things we might want to do? Here's the agenda, you know, who is attending and the ages and what are all the options? And it's an easier way to get started. Now, you're not going to end there. You're going to go then looking at that other stuff, right? So that is one thing I've found out. AI isn't perfect. And so it only is as good as the information it scrapes and gets to you. And so sometimes what it gets you isn't quite right.
Yes.
So you do have to backstop it. You can't just 100%, but that's actually quicker than then going and opening 5 million tabs and trying to do it all. And then you go down these rabbit holes, because then it at least narrows those options that you're looking at.
Yes. And then you can move to professional. One thing that I've learned is once you start showing people what's possible, even on a very small scale, then it opens them up for them to say, oh, I can use it for X, Y, Z, and ABC. And so it really starts with them at a base level, just seeing what's possible. Once you see what's possible and get ideas and use cases from others. So not just seeing what's possible, but once you have that, developing your own use cases and then being open to hearing from others that also have different ideas and use cases that you can try, and it'll help you along your journey.
Okay. So are you able to give people one or two ideas for how they could start using AI for professional use?
Yes. So my two favorite things that I like to do at the very beginning, I like to use it to summarize really dense things. So if you have a rule or if you have a memo or some document that you want to break down, maybe it's, 10 pages, 5 pages, and you want to either summarize it, you want to get a better understanding of it, you want to simplify it, you could put that document in the tool and then start asking the tool questions about the document in a way that helps make it more accessible to you. So I think that's one thing that a number of lawyers, whether you're a law firm or in-house, use it for, document organization, and really just breaking down and better understanding a document. A second thing that I love using it for, emails. So you can use it in a number of ways for emails, but what a lot of people do is they'll have a rough draft of an email, and then they will either ask ChatGPT or whatever, or the model, to provide recommended areas to improve on the email. And so not just editing it, because that's what most people think. Put this in, edit it for grammar. No, what are some suggestions that I can improve? And based on what? Based on tone, based on audience, based on et cetera. And then it will give you those suggestions that you can use to improve and implement on your emails. You can also use it to adjust tone in your writing or change different styles. And then one thing that I think people don't use it for, which I think they should, especially for emails, is, or even a letter, you can use it to be, to look at the counter of something. So if someone's reading it, what are some arguments that they could make against either the letter or the correspondence? And you can use that as a guide and say, okay, oh, wow, I didn't think about these points. Let me mitigate them here now.
Oh, that would be awesome. Yeah, I think that's where the brainstorming to me comes into play. That's a form of getting, what are the gaps? What could an objection be? What could a counter argument be? Because we're often so focused on our points that we forget. And so you can utilize AI for that. And I agree with the tone. I actually have a client who does that, where she knows she writes very short and sweet email, not so sweet, but very short, very kind of almost terse because of how short they are. And she'll put it in there and basically ask it to keep it basically the same, keep it professional. Remember that she's a lawyer, but be a little more conversational, not so terse. And she loves what it gives her. So because she knows how she can sound sometimes, and that's not really how it sounds in her head, but it's how it comes out on an email. And so that's another way that you can utilize it.
And I think one thing that would be a bonus as you progress, and this is one I love, I'm sure you use this too, Heather, is giving it examples. So if there is a document that you want to replicate and you don't want to start from zero, you can import or give it the example as the guide, as the leader, And one thing about models is they love to mimic. The more that you give it to mimic, the closer it's going to get to giving you that exact output, sometimes to a fault. But your ability to give it these examples allows you to take then your rough draft and really collaborate with it so that it can help you massage that rough draft to make it more like the example that you gave it, whether it's structure, style, tone, presence, et cetera. And I think that a lot of lawyers in-house, out, you know, government, lawyers, people, period, humans could really benefit from that because that is a very strong skill of a model that yes. sometimes is underutilized if you're as you're a beginner, but as you grow, that is one thing that I continuously go back to.
So one way I've used it, and I don't know that this applies to most lawyers, unless it's a solo or small firm lawyer, this could apply to them. But I think this will give people more ideas, is copywriting for my website. So something I've learned is I can, and I've got it quite well trained at this point, and I just use the same thread that has it very well trained, but I can input LinkedIn posts. I can input all kinds of things that I've written, emails that I've written to my newsletter. So that gives it the style, the tone, the way I speak. And then I can give it all kinds of information about who I work with, who my target clients are, what their issues are, problems, worries, why they come to me. And then I can give them specific language from testimonials from clients. And then also not just testimonials, but the kinds of things they say to me when they first come to me. I can cut and paste that kind of stuff in. And what it does is it gives me copy that sounds like me but speaks directly to my perfect clients for headlines and subheadlines and different. And I've utilized that to kind of upgrade my website over the years. Really, this last year, I've done a lot of that. And it's been phenomenal how well that has worked.
I love that. And just speaking on that, thought leadership in general. So whether it's copywriting, or I'm thinking if you especially are in a law firm and you're doing part of like the newsletter team or writing a publication, you can help, the model can help you with that first draft. It can, again, look at the draft you've given it, provide suggestions for improvement. So especially for lawyers that are big on LinkedIn, for example, and they want to become more prolific writers on the social, I would really suggest doing more writing. And yep. models can, I think generative AI is a great tool to help with that journey.
It is. I do think that initially, if you haven't been writing a lot, you need to write more to be able to give it, yes. like for it to help you with the tone and the style. But it can still help with the ideation. It could. So, for example, actually, right before we got on this call, I am trying to take 4 separate emails that I've written over the last 4 years to my newsletter, and they all have a similar theme and concept, but they're talking about it a little differently. And I'm going to record a podcast on this issue, and I know I want to put it all together. Well, In old times, I would have taken those and I would have spent 2 hours looking through all of them and figuring out how I want to get it into one whole outline, right, of starting to end. Well, instead, I basically wrote a couple of paragraphs of instructions. Here's the basic theme. Here's the gist. Here's what I'm getting at. Here's the 4 emails. I want these concepts in there and I want to use most of these examples. How would you suggest, in an outline form, don't write it for me, outline form, I would, you know, you would go through this. And it did that for me. Great. You know, perfectly. And so instead of 2 hours doing that, now I have that. And it's a starting point for me that I'm now going back and tweaking and I'm moving some things. And like, it's not perfect, but it is so much further along. And it's going to take me maybe a total of an hour to work on that, which would have taken me 2 hours just to get started. And then I would have tweaked it more. So it would have taken me a lot. You know, what would have taken probably 3 or 4 hours is probably going to take me 1 hour total. And it can really be a time saver once you learn how to utilize the tools to your benefit in that way.
Yes. And you said something that you gave a paragraph of instructions. I think for beginners, what's important is understanding and learning the skill of prompting. So a prompt can be as simple as a sentence. And that's what most people think of when they think, oh, I'm going to play with ChatGPT. But the real magic and your ability, as I always say, as a leader and a guide, comes from your ability to give multiple instructions. So similar to a human, you can data dump on a human and you're probably going to get subpar results because they're not going to be able to retain all of that to give you exactly what you need. Or on the opposite end, you can tell them one generalized sentence and again, end up disappointed. So being able to learn the skill of prompting, learn the skill of creating instructions in a sequence that help you be a guide, I think is really key for any beginner to start learning. And even advanced, as you progress, you just get better and you can always learn and grow.
Oh, yeah. No, so it was two paragraphs of instructions, not huge paragraphs, but I will say, I would never have known what to tell it had I not done what you said. So when I started down this road, it was give me X, right? Here's this, just do this. Okay, so that's not quite right. I need it to da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Okay, that's closer, but now I need it to da-da-da-da, right? And so over time, you kind of learn, oh, I need to tell it to do all that.
Absolutely. But
you can't do that until you start with the simple. And then you realize what you don't like and what you still need. And so that, it takes time. You have to learn that. And then you learn, okay, now I can give it two small paragraphs of very specific instructions, who this is for, what this is for, how I need it, why I need it. You know, I don't really need to tell them why, but, you know, but it's very more concise and specific in one. And then I get exactly what I want. Now, I will say, I don't always get exactly what I want, which means then I have to learn more about what to tell it.
Yes. And I think two other use cases that I just thought about that I think lawyers would be interested in. The first one is you could build templates. So if you have documents that you do over and over again, where you have a static part and then you have dynamic sections or placeholders, you could build out a template or work with it to build out a template so that you can more operationalize it. And then the second is building out legal workflows. So if there is a particular workflow that you need to tighten up, you can tell it what your current workflow is, get ideas for the gaps and work with it to literally build out an end-to-end workflow to improve a process or a procedure.
Yes. I was going to say that creating a system or a process around like regularized things, especially for the things that we need to start delegating.
Yes.
So a lot of times with my clients, I have clients who, you know, are young partners or, you know, mid-level partners, and they're really trying to scale, which means they have to start delegating a lot more. But it's hard for them to figure out, how do I do this? How do I explain? What do they need to know? This is just something I do. And you have to actually sit down and really think through it. And I could see where AI could really help with that piece in helping you figure out, okay, what are the steps? And how many different people need to be involved? And what is the full workflow here? And how could we systematize this and track it?
But I would say start small, because for a beginner, something like that is very overwhelming. For someone like you or I, we're like, okay, let's go. Let's do it. But that's why I think there's so much room to grow in this space. It's not, you know, you learn X, Y, Z and suddenly you're an expert, which in some ways is great and in other ways is terrifying. Because you're always thinking, what's coming around the corner? What haven't I thought about? But in that, it also, I think, for lawyers, builds or reinforces a skill set of being adaptable and flexible.
That's a really important point, I think. And I will say, you will be able to get from the really small, simple stuff to a much more complicated stuff more quickly than you realize. But you do have to start somewhere. So start small. And play around with it, see how else you might want to use it as you start, and you'll be amazed how quickly you can learn to utilize it for your own personal use and then also to make things easier, simpler, to delegate easier, all of that stuff.
Yes, agree 100%.
So what risks? We hear the horror stories about how people misuse AI or don't utilize it correctly or don't think about the privacy concerns. I mean, there's a lot of things. So let's talk a little bit about the risks, what to be aware of, and how to guard against them.
So I say, I want to start at the top, and this may be controversial, but one of the biggest risks is user error. For example, if you think that the tool is going to give you something perfect, you may be tempted not to check your work. And if the tool is giving you anything other than perfect and you don't check your work and you're providing that as a final document to its support, whether it's a court, a client, or someone is relying on that advice, the user not supervising the tool is the biggest risk. Now, that's controversial because a lot of people want to focus on other things, but I think that really is, in my opinion, one of the key risks. From the tool itself, you mentioned this earlier, the tool is only as good as the data it's trained on. So the tool data, if the tool's data that it's being given is biased, if the tool's data that is being given is inaccurate, and if it is scraping the internet, it is pulling and making judgment calls, not being able to make, in many cases, judgment calls based on the accuracy of the data. It's looking at patterns. Okay, 15 sources said this, 2 sources said that. But bad data in equals bad data out. Yep. So a lot of bias occurs, and sometimes it's subtle and sometimes it's obvious. I think a good example of a key risk is whether it's in employment or even asking it to give a description of a lawyer. It's more than likely going to give a white male in a business suit. And if you ask it to give you a visual representation, which I have, you will more often than not get that representation. And it's not that the model is being mean. That is the data that it's being trained on. So that's right. A huge risk is bias. Another one is hallucination.
I'm glad you brought that one up.
Yes, hallucination really occurs because I always think of it like a puppy. It wants to give you an answer. It wants to like be there. It wants to like please you, even if in pleasing you, it's giving you something inaccurate. So the model is really trained to, you give it input to give you output. And it's looking at frameworks and patterns and thinking, what would a pattern or a framework for X output look like? Mm-hmm. Even if it's not accurate, it's trying to get you something. And so you will have many times, especially when it's data that is more abstract or there's limited information, you will often get the model providing you with inaccurate, whether it's links, source sites, conclusions, reasoning that's incorrect. Mm-hmm. So hallucinations is the big one. Finally, the fourth for all of us privacy lawyers, I don't want to leave you guys out, data. So you learning on a tool as a beginner, use the free one. But remember what I said, make sure it's stuff that is low risk, low lift. And the reason why I said that, aka non-personal information, is because public free models are not free. They may be free in cost, but they're making money. And let me tell you how they're making money. They're taking the data and they're training on it and they're using it for the companies, however they want to use it. And so the free is not really free. So whatever you put in, unless you are using a enterprise or company version of the tool, or I would even argue even the paid tools where you pay $20 a month, where they say you can go incognito, I would even argue not to trust that. But those tools, unless you have an enterprise, what I call closed version, which is closed to your organization, whatever you're putting in, it is being used for something. Mm-hmm. And the risk of data leakage, I think, is a huge risk. And again, though that comes from user, the ability of a user to understand where their data is going and how to protect their own personal data. And if you work for a company, the company's data.
Yeah, that's why I only use AI for things that are going public, that I'm putting out there publicly anyway, right? A podcast, an article I'm writing, a LinkedIn post, website copy. Those are the kinds of things I use it for, because I'm like, well, that's public anyway, and anybody can scrape that off. It doesn't, you know, matter to me what they do with that information. So I think you want to think about it both from a professional risk, but also personally. What do you want it to know about you? What are you putting in there?
Which could actually be a benefit, because knowing that, you can almost, I'm going to say, feed the machine. So yeah. A great example is there's a model called Perplexity, and Perplexity is, think of it like Google, but not real, but Google Plus. It's Google Plus ChatGPT, and you can ask it who you are and look to see what it comes up with. And mm-hmm. that really shows you, and I think it's a good exercise, because it shows you your footprint. Mm-hmm. What does the internet etherverse think that you are? Who does it think you are? How does it think that you move through the world? The who, what, when, where, and why? Whether it's from a branding perspective, or even if someone is looking you up, what are they finding out about you? You don't want to be the last person to know that information.
Mm-hmm. And a note about the hallucination. I call it lying. I know what you mean by it, but I'm like, oh, it lies. You know, mostly like a little kid does who's just trying to please you. That's what it reminds me of, yes. Right? So funny example of how this happened. So I was doing research on kind of stress and anxiety, and it was a work-life balance related article that I'm writing. And I also wanted some very specific research and I couldn't find anything doing my own searches. So I was like, probably this doesn't exist, but let me just ask, like, what stats are out there around? And I got very specific, and it gave me a bunch of awesome looking stats, right? But it didn't give me where it got it from. Like, a couple of them, it gave me, you know, the AMA survey, like, and some of the stats I already had. Like, I already had all the stuff, I think, that's out there. And so then I started questioning, okay, so where did this statistic come from? Oh, well, I'm really sorry. That doesn't really exist. Like, I would get these little, oops, sorry. Here's where I got this from. I kind of came up with it by combining these things. And I'm like, okay, that's an argument that I would make, that this probably happens based on these things. Yes. And I already know that, but there's no statistic that's actually provable here.
Yes. So,
you have to be careful, and you must, if it doesn't give you a link, you got to go ask it for it. And then you got to go check them. Because I will say sometimes, and this has happened to me, not so much using the AI tools, but the AI tools that are on Google when you do searches, if you ever notice when it gives you the summaries, and it doesn't for every search, but there are certain ones, it'll give you summaries and it'll say something. There was something I was looking up a couple of months ago that I was talking to my son Noah about, and he said X. And I was like, okay, well, that sounds interesting. Let me look that up. And it actually said Y. No, this is what it is. Here's what it is. And it gave a link. And so I'm like, okay, that's the opposite of what my son is saying. Let me see it. Well, then I read through the link. I'm like, Noah's right. Google's wrong. It totally misinterpreted what the article was saying. So sometimes it also gets things wrong. Like, it just doesn't understand completely.
Yes. And I think it's going to get better with time. I know two things that the models have evolved to do. There are models that have reasoning capabilities. So it will tell you why it is coming up with that particular rationale, mm-hmm. which I think is really helpful, because then you can understand how it's thinking so that you can adjust. And then the models that connect to the internet. So ChatGPT does that. Claude now is a model that does that, but the ability for it to continuously be going out to the internet, because prior, a lot of the models were built on a contained timeline. Mm. They pulled or scraped internet data up until May 4th, 2024. So that was the universe of which it learned. But now with ChatGPT, you can turn on or enable the web search feature. So it will actually go out to the web to see if it could get more updated information. And through that, like you said, Heather, it will provide you with source links, which you can then look to double check.
Yes.
Which I highly recommend.
Yes. So before I let you go today, what would be your top couple of tools that you would recommend lawyers get started with?
I always start with the beginning, ChatGPT. So start with the general model. That could be ChatGPT, which everyone knows about, but also it could be Gemini. If you are in a Google workspace, you have access to that. And then there's another tool called Claude from Anthropic. I personally like Claude as a writer.
I feel
like it captures my essence and style, even professionally as a writer, more than ChatGPT. So each of the models have their own personalities, and they're all good at different things. Google is better for like image generation, video, et cetera. So I would say start at those three, because they will give you that really good base. Mm. One tool that I use continuously is a tool called Gamma. I build a lot of decks and presentations. So it's PowerPoint or Canva on steroids. And
really?
Gamma is
really
great.
One. I might need to go check that one out.
Yeah, so let me know. Gamma is great because you can put in a prompt, but what I use it for is I take an outline that, whether it's ChatGPT, Gemini, helps me to create. And you can upload the outline and then designate the slides. And then you can choose to either have it rewrite things for you or choose to preserve the words. Mm-hmm. And then it'll tell you how many cards. And then you can see, it'll go, and you could see it creating the decks. It also has access to about 5 or 6 image generating platforms, and each of them are very different. Some are more professional looking images, some are more playful. So you can play with that and then have it build it for you. And it's cut down my deck creation time by 75%.
Oh, wow. Okay. I definitely have to check that one out.
So Gamma.
Okay. Well, I will put links to all of these things. Most people know ChatGPT and Gemini.
Yes.
Some people will know Claude. Many probably won't. I love
Claude
too.
Yes.
Claude writes much better than ChatGPT does. I'll put in there too.
Yes. We definitely need a link for Claude.
We definitely need a link for Claude. Yeah, I love Claude. And you can use Claude has a paid version, but they also have a free version that you can start with. So I would say definitely check these out. So how can people connect with you if they want to find out more about you and connect with you via LinkedIn, Instagram, wherever it is you are?
So I live on LinkedIn. Yeah. So you can, my home is there. So definitely 100% connect with me on LinkedIn. What I try and do on LinkedIn is provide content in-house lawyers, but really a lot of my content is practical to anyone, lawyers in general. And I will, if you go to my page, you'll also be kept up to date. I have links for different workshops that I'm hosting. And as you alluded to earlier in May, I'm going to be revealing, so it'll come out soon in a couple weeks, a boot camp for lawyers in general. So I'm excited to feature that. And that will also be on LinkedIn. You can check out the information behind that.
Yeah, I would definitely say go follow Mariette if you're interested at all in AI, because she's got a lot of great information. She posts a lot. I follow her. We're friends on LinkedIn. And you'll get a lot of good information just there. And then you'll also get her notifications for when she has workshops on these types of things. Well, thank you so much for coming today. This was fun. Thank you for listening to the Life and Law Podcast. If you enjoyed this week's episode and aren't yet a follower or subscriber, be sure to hit the follow subscribe button so that you don't miss an episode. For show notes and free resources to help you develop the mindset, leadership, and business skills you need to succeed in both law and life, visit lifeandlawpodcast.com.